Yeah, gotcha, everybody. Okay. Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome. I think this is the ninth in our 13, like, part series on Pesach, continuing on Motzei Shabbos on Sunday morning and Monday afternoon. It's a pleasure to have everybody on board. For those who have never been on E-Team before, and I think there are at least one or two people, so you can feel free to text message questions in the middle, and I'll try to get to them at some point, or if you'd like to actually speak by hitting the transmit button, that is fine. If there's any problem with the sound, you can either let me know, or preferably let technical support know. You can scroll down on the left where you have all the names, just highlight the technical support or whoever, and just that person will see the message, and if you hit all, everybody will see the message. That's better than even in class where you can pass notes and the teacher doesn't even notice. Okay. All right. We're going to discuss the state of the exile. That's what I called it. It Lashana Habav Yerushalayim. Hi, Dad. You can take a seat in the corner. Yeah. There's room. Okay. Twice a year, we say in our davening, Lashana by Yerushalayim, in our liturgy, not exactly in our davening, we say it, of course, on Yom Kippur, at the end, and we say it, we sing it, that's the minhag we have, right at the end of Yom Kippur, and of course, we say it at the end of the Pesach Seder. It appears to me that the simple reason we do that is these are the two times a year when we most notice the missing of Yerushalayim. Yom Kippur, of course, was totally transformed after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Until that point, so much of Yom Kippur revolved around the special sacrificial order they did at the temple, the Kohen Gadol did. As a matter of fact, the last Mishnah in Yuma tells us that Rabbi Akiva really had to comfort the Jewish people and to tell them, don't worry, even though there's no temple anymore, it's God in heaven who is really the one who offers our forgiveness, and we can continue to have the opportunity to revitalize and re-energize our relationship to God on Yom Kippur, even without the Beit HaMikdash. So that's why it appears to me, Lashana B'Rishlaim, there's so much that is missing from Yom Kippur. And of course, what we want to focus on is how much is missing on Pesach. With the change, the destruction of the temple in the year 70, and the long exile that we have been in, even though, you know, thank God we have a state of Israel, and interestingly enough, there were major serious rabbinic debate around the middle 1800s on the reestablishment of the Korban Pesach. Many of the leading sages, or some of the leading sages anyways, were of the opinion that even though we don't have a temple, and even though there are all kinds of problems bringing up the sacrifices, you could reestablish the Korban Pesach in our time. That's not really our topic, but there was a movement, a serious movement. I've often mentioned that the Binyan Sion, Rav Yaakov Eplinger, who was the Rebbe of Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, called his responsa, Yosefer, his book on Shailat Tshuvot, Binyan Sion, because the first responsa deals with the ability to reestablish some of the korbanot, to do the Beit HaMikdash, to have the Korban Pesach nowadays. And he said no, but he called the Sefer Binyan Sion. Anyway, we've lost a lot, and that's what I'm going to try to highlight, is how our Seder has changed a little bit, besides the fact that we don't, the obvious fact that we don't have the Korban Pesach. Okay, that's by way of introduction. Any comments or questions, please feel free to interject now. Okay. The Netziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who died in 1892, I believe, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, in his introduction to his Haggadah, which I'll show right online for those who can see, Imre Shafer, so he says that the goal of the Seder night is to recreate what the Seder was like when the temple was standing, to the best of our ability, obviously. And with that, he explains two strange customs that we have on Pesach night. The first one, the common one, is that we wash before karpus, which we'll come back to a little later on. We know right at the beginning of the Seder, we eat a little bit, and then we don't eat again for a couple hours. And we wash. We dip our hand. We dip whatever you eat, whatever, parsley, potato, depending on your custom, in the salt water. And but we do not make a blessing. We don't make a bracha on the washing. And this has bothered many of the commentaries for a long time. Why are we washing our hands, and why do we only wash our hands on Pesach? The Shulchan Aruch records that one is supposed to wash their hands whenever they eat a fruit or vegetable dipped in water, but that's not our general practice. That's not what people do, rightly or wrongly. So why do we do it all of a sudden on Pesach night? So the Nesiv explains, because when the Beit HaMikdash stood, everybody was strict about these laws because they were quite important, laws of purity and impurity, and for certain impurities, washing of the hands was enough. And therefore, at the Seder night, since we want to recreate that atmosphere, we wash our hands. That's a very simple point. Next, he explains that the custom that some people have to wear a kittel at the Seder. So many people explain the reason we wear a kittel is because there is so much joy, we're overjoyed, and to calm us down a little bit, to put us back into reality, we put a kittel. Just like at the wedding, the custom is that the groom wears a kittel, so we shouldn't get too carried away. You should remember we're all buried in a kittel, and we can't have too much or complete joy in this world. That's how many explain it. The Nesiv explained it differently. He said that the kittel really symbolizes fine, white, beautiful garments. And that when we're eating the Korban Pesach, we're eating, so to speak, in the presence of God. And therefore, we have to wear very fine, white, linen, you know, clothes. And that's what the kittel is. And he quotes that when Paro took Yosef, which, of course, the Pesach story really begins with Yosef in Egypt. And the truth of the matter is, the Tzonet Pasim that Yaakov made him, I think Rashi refers to the notion of karpas, that's what he calls it, in the Chumash. So when Yosef was taken out of jail, he dressed in big day sheish, in these fine white like linen garments that we wear at the Seder. So that's what the Nesiv writes in his introduction. But that's just by way of introduction. In terms of you go to the Seder itself. The Seder begins with Halach Manya. Everybody knows we invite the poor to come to our Seder. First of all, it's very strange. Halach Manya is in Aramaic. The entire Seder is in Hebrew. Most of the Seder is recorded in the Mishnah, which was written in the land of Israel, and therefore was written in Hebrew. And the only parts of the Seder that are in Aramaic are Halach Manya, right at the beginning of the Seder, and Chagadiah, which we say right at the end of the Seder. Everything else is in Hebrew. By the way, it is important to note that one is obligated to say the Haggadah in whatever language one understands. Whereas, in theory, it's not ideal, but in theory, one can daven in a Hebrew even if you do not understand Hebrew. Or one can listen to the reading of the Torah or the Megillah, even if you don't understand it, you fulfill your obligation. Maybe not ideally, but you fulfill your obligation. If a person recites the Pesach Seder in Hebrew and does not understand it, they do not fulfill their obligation. The obligation here is to tell a story, and if you tell a story but people don't understand it, you haven't told the story. So it's very important the Haggadah be said in Aramaic was the language of the exile, or English for many of us now. It's if you want to say it Hebrew and English, but only one, then you'd have to say it in English if you don't understand Hebrew. But the first and the beginning and the end of the Seder are in Aramaic, and that seems to me to be a hint that while Pesach is a very joyous holiday, and that's the way the Seder is supposed to be, we begin and end with the lament that we're in the exile, and Aramaic being the language that was spoken in the exile. Now, Halach Manya itself is very, really a sad like notion. We sometimes focus, we're going to invite all the poor people, which really makes no sense at this point in the Seder, at 9 o'clock at night. When everything's all been done, and you tell the people sitting around your Seder table, whoever comes in hungry, who should come and eat, I'm not exactly sure who we are talking to. And that's why the custom was, I believe, at some point they used to say it in Shul, but that's our custom, we begin the Halach Manya. So it's not so much inviting people in, because it's a little late for that. But what Halach Manya really is a lament, that this is the poor man's bread, Hashat HaHacha, this year we're here, next year we should be free. Next year we should be in Jerusalem. And of course, the entire notion of inviting somebody really is a symbol of the exile. I'm sure many of you know that one of the basic laws of the Korban Pesach, the Paschal Lamb, was that you could not invite people at the last minute. When you shechted, when you slaughtered the animal, which was done on Erev Pesach, you had to know exactly who was eating from the Korban. The 22 people who were eating, you couldn't, and everybody had to eat from that Korban, and the 2 hours later, somebody didn't have a place to eat, they could not participate in the Korban Pesach if they had not come and prepared in advance. Matzah is very different. A person can walk in off the street and eat matzah. So in essence, that's what we do. When we begin the Seder, we say, Halach Manya, this is the poor man's bread. We're in exile. We're speaking Aramaic. We can invite whoever we want. If we were in Jerusalem and there was a Korban Pesach, for whatever reason, we could not invite you to partake of the Korban. So, unfortunately, if we can use such a notion, unfortunately, we can invite you to partake of the matzah even at the last minute. That's really how we begin the Seder, in a sense, in a very a down note. It's also, I like to point out that the Halach Manya is inviting people in. Now, we know that the way our calendar is arranged, Atbash, you know, Gar, Duck, that the days of Pesach correspond to all the other holidays of the year, including, for those who are into this kind of stuff, including Yom Atzma'ut. It also works out, Zayin Ayin. But anyway, Atbash, and the Aleph is, the first day of Pesach always corresponds to when Tisha B'Av is going to be. And so Tisha B'Av this year will be on a Saturday night, Sunday. And that's not just, a cute thing that works out. It appears to me that this is a deliberate notion. If the notion of Pesach is to develop the sensitivity towards others, which is the key notion of Pesach, and if we begin the Seder by inviting other people in, so there's sort of a warning. If we are remiss in this area, our obligations to our fellow human being, then instead of the Aleph, instead of the Pesach, we get the Taf, we get a Tisha B'Av. So we even begin the Seder, and that, of course, is the reason many give why we eat an egg. Later on in the Seder, the egg is the sign of mourning, and that's so reminiscent of the notion of Tisha B'Av. And if I could take it a step further, I would say that's why the Seder is so insistent that we have all the different types of children sitting at the Seder. That we have the Russia. We're insistent on inviting the evil, sibling to join us at our Seder, because they're also part of Klal Yisrael, which is, by the way, we also do on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, we begin Yom Kippur by inviting the sinners to daven with us right before, Kol Nidre. I'm sure y'all remember. Anu matirim li palalim avaryanim. We seek permission to pray with all the sinners. And so too, that's what we do at Pesach. So that's really how Halach Manya begins, to remind us that as much fun and enjoyment we're going to have the rest of the stay there, we have to begin to recognize that this is only an imitation, a pale reflection of what the stay there is supposed to be. Now, any questions or comments? Up to now, everybody's nice and quiet. Okay, if you want to write anything, if not, okay. The Maggid itself is slightly different, or most likely is slightly different, the essence of the Seder. We know that we have a strange practice that we do not tell the story of the Exodus from Shemot. If I were to write the Haggadah, thank God I didn't. If I were to write the Haggadah, we have to tell the story of Egypt, so I would open up a Chumash Shemot, Ba'era, Bo, B'Shalach, Shemot, perhaps a little bit. I would open up a Chumash, and that's where I would tell the story. But that's not what we do. We so much don't do it that, as you know, even Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned in the Haggadah, which is quite an astounding idea, which we're not going to get into now. But the way we do tell the story is we tell the story from the Parsha of Bikurim, the first fruit that the farmer was obliged, the farmer living in Israel, to bring to the temple to give to the Kohen, an act of gratitude. Everything which is first belongs to God. the firstborn, Makat Bechorot. Also, we have a link there. And then when the farmer brought the fruit, the farmer has to understand that we're not just in Israel because we happen to have a piece of real estate there. But the reason the Jews are in Israel are for the covenant that God made with us. So when the farmer comes, in Parsha Kitavo, we reach before Rosh Hashanah, so the farmer has to give a brief synopsis of Jewish history. What we have today are four verses in the Haggadah, Arami Oved Avi, Vayered Mitzrayma, and we go etc., piece by piece, the boring part of the Haggadah. After the four questions, the four sons, the stories, you know, then we get into, that's all the introduction. But the real important stuff, the harder stuff, but we have all these, the Midrashic comments by Areotan and what this means, and so we go through the pasuk verse by verse. The Mishnah tells us that when you tell the story of the Haggadah, so Matzil Ba'arami Oved Avi, V'Gomra Kol HaParsha. I don't remember the exact language, but we finished the entire chapter. And of course, the last verse in the chapter is Vayavienu El HaMakom Hazeh. God brought us to this place, the land of Israel. Vayiten Lenu Et Haaretz Hazot. This land, Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, a land flowing with milk and honey. Now I'm bringing the first fruit, Asher Natata Li Hashem, that you, God, have given to me. I put it down. And you're happy that all that God has given. Again, the notion of sharing. Ata Levi, you, the Levite, the Ger, share b'kirbecha. Now, we do not do that in the Haggadah anymore. We end the Haggadah with the pasuk Vayotzieinu Hashem Mitzrayim Biyad Chazaka Bizruah Netiyah V'Merah Gadol Ba'Toto B'Moftim, because it would have been extremely strange for a Jew living in Spain or Poland or Lithuania or Russia to say, thank you God for bringing us into the land of Israel. And what happened is we cut short the last two verses that should be part of the Magid section. Were taken out of the Haggadah. Rav Soloveitchik notes that's one explanation he gives. Rav Soloveitchik notes it could be that was never meant to be part of the Haggadah, because the Haggadah does not focus on the land of Israel. That's the holiday of Sukkot, that focuses on Israel. Pesach focuses on Chayrut, on freedom, on the making God known to the Jewish people and to the whole world. So, but be that as it may, it's not really the simple pshat, and the Rav himself admits that the other pshat, we shortened the Haggadah. I don't know if people are so upset about that. I don't know if they want extra Maggid, an extra three verses. And we took off the last, you know, two verses that talk about the farmer in the land of Israel. That's one of the things we did in Maggid itself is different. Now, what's quite fascinating is when we get towards the end of Maggid, we mentioned Pesach, Matzah, Umaror. Those are the three key components. Rabban Gamliel says, after you didn't say Koshelo Amar Shloshet Varim Elu, Lo Yatsa Yedei Chovato, you did not fulfill your obligation. There's actually a debate in the Rishonim. The medieval authorities have a debate. What does it mean you didn't fulfill your obligation? You didn't fulfill your obligation of telling the story. In other words, if you don't say why we have the Korban Pesach, and why we eat matzah, why we eat maror, we haven't fully told the story as we should. That's one explanation. Or some say the explanation is we haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of matzah. If you eat the matzah and you eat the maror, or you would eat the Korban Pesach without telling the reason, you wouldn't fulfill that obligation. You can't just eat matzah. You have to know why you're eating the matzah. So either way, either you don't fulfill the proper telling of the story, or you don't fulfill the mitzvah itself, but whatever it is, this is the key part of the Seder. Many other parts of the Seder, you know, people have to leave, or we talked about earlier, making sure people understand it. I don't think you have to translate every single line. You don't have to translate the four children, and you don't have to translate whatever, Dayenu, you don't have to translate. But this part, of course, on Rabban Gamliel, is the key part you would have to translate. But it's interesting. It says in our Haggadah, why do we eat matzah? So let me see if anybody wants to answer. Why do we eat matzah? Why does the Seder say, the Haggadah, why do we eat matzah? I'm sure you all learned this in kindergarten. I think we learned it then. Why do we eat matzah? So the Haggadah says, Ashum Shalohi speak with the Kam Shalavotenu Lachmitz. This story everybody knows. We didn't have time. The dough did not have time to rise until God took us out of Egypt. And then they quote a verse by Yafu at the Habatzek. We cooked it, a whole long story. We left Egypt really, really, really quickly in a hurry. Of course, it's interesting, the command to eat matzah, if you look in the Torah, right, Kibachifazon, we left quickly. The command to eat matzah is actually given before we left Egypt. That's just an aside. If you look in chapter 12 in Shmot, you'll note that the command to eat the matzah was actually given before the story, you know, took place. But that's why it's written there. That's another story. But just that's what it says. But if you look in the Mishnah doesn't say that exactly. The Mishnah says, why do we eat matzah? Ashum shenigalu avotenu mimitzrayim. The reason we eat matzah is because we were redeemed from Egypt. That's it. That's why we eat matzah. Now, it's not that these answers are contradictory. Yeah. Just hold on. Let me find it right in the Mishnah. Yeah, we were redeemed from Egypt. It doesn't say anything that we had to leave in a hurry, we didn't have time. That's not mentioned in the Mishnah, which, and the Pesach and the Maror are copied straight from the Mishnah. So the question is, why did the authors of the Haggadah change? We have, by the way, maybe we'll get to a little later if we have a chance, the author of the Haggadah also changed the answers of the four children. We know the four children appear in the Torah, and two of the four answers are as they appear in the Torah. The Tam and the Sheino Yodei Lishol are given the same answers that the Torah gives. The answers of the Chacham and Rasha, the Baal Haggadah, the anonymous authors of the Haggadah, changed the answers. Very interesting. Obviously, they're dealing on the Midrashic level. They're trying to get across additional levels. So here, too, the reason for the eating of the matzah was amplified or changed in the Haggadah. So the Netziv, we mentioned earlier, the great Rosh Yeshiva in Balashin, comments that during the time where we had the Beit HaMikdash and we ate the Korban Pesach, the matzah was no big deal. I'll get to that question in a second. The eating matzah, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to eat matzah, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to eat maror, there's a mitzvah to eat the Korban Pesach, but by far the Korban Pesach is most important. The Korban Pesach is actually the most, one can argue, the most important mitzvah in all of Judaism. Historically, it was the most important mitzvah. It was what allowed us to live, it's what allowed us to survive as a Jewish people. Those who didn't take the Korban Pesach, who didn't put the blood on their doorposts, that was it. So historically, the Korban Pesach was the guarantee of the survival, the existence of the Jewish people. And we know it's also the symbolism of it. We took the Egyptian god and we slaughtered it. We are ridding ourselves from the idolatrous, you know, pagan practices of the Egyptians. And this, of course, is reflected in Jewish law, that the halakha states that a Jew living in the land of Israel who does not bring a Korban Pesach is a prohibition or the punishment of karet. He is cut off from his people, which is the same punishment for eating of chametz. Now, there are 36 times in the Torah you get the punishment of karet. 34 of those times are for negative commandments. Only two of the commandments carry with it the penalty of karet that are positive, and that's namely, of course, the Brit Milah, which thank God even various assimilated Jews do, and Korban Pesach. So the Korban Pesach is far and away the most important mitzvah, say, that we have, way more important than the eating of the matzah. And that was the focus of the Seder. That was the focus. So when we spoke at the Seder, when we ate the Korban Pesach, so he said, why do we eat matzah? Because God redeemed us from Egypt. And the redemption is really the symbol of the Korban Pesach. Matzah is the symbol of the food we ate as slaves. It's matzah has the dual connotation. In our Haggadah, the matzah has the dual connotation. We ate it because when we were going free. But that's what the slaves ate. It's, nuts is a very good food to serve slaves. It's cheap, it's easy to make, it stores for a long time, it's filling. It's an ideal food to serve a slave. The redemption food is really the corn pesach, nice, like juicy lamb on the barbecue, beautiful. That's great. That's the our redemption. So therefore, the matzah played very little role in the original Seder. When we lost the Korban Pesach, so the authors of the Haggadah expanded on the matzah. We ate matzah because we ran out in a hurry, we didn't have time, etc., etc. We no longer focus that God redeemed us from Egypt. We're focusing on the specific area of the matzah. That's just, I don't know if people have ever really, you know, noted that before, the slight difference in the two. But the key point I'm trying to make is that the matzah really had a much lower status. There is a matzah, a mitzvah to eat matzah. It's akin to eating on the first night in Sukkot, which of course is also important. But somehow we know that people put much greater emphasis on eating matzah than they do on eating in the Sukkah on the first night, especially non-observant Jews. And halachically, that's not, there is no difference. You have to eat matzah on the first night, and that's it. Those of us who live outside of Israel on the second night. But it's the Korban Pesach that is key. Okay, let me try to get to a couple comments we have on site. Who authored the Haggadah? So I'm not an expert in this area, but the basics of the Haggadah are found in the Mishnah, which of course was authored and edited really over hundreds of years. The 10th chapter of Psachim, Arvei Psachim, has this notion, that's where I'm saying the contrast is, the Rabban Gamliel Omer, the four questions appear there, Matchil B'Gnud U'Masayim B'Shavach, we have to start with our degradation. When I mentioned before the Parsha of the Bikurim, the Mishnah says we have to say that whole Parsha, the six verses that nowadays are only four, that's all in the Mishnah. Vayenu, Halach Manya, Echad Miyoteh, these are, I know some of them were added in the Middle Ages, in Germany, Piyutim. Halach Manya was probably added in Babel. I don't think there was one author. Of course there wasn't one author. And in a sense, it's an anonymous author. It's like our Siddur. Things got added on. And the truth of the matter is there's not one version to the Haggadah. If you look in the Rambam's Haggadah, I believe, has, there are five questions, which we'll get to in a moment, not the four that we have. There are different editions. Many Jews, I know at our Seder, and my father's here to my left, that at our Seder growing up, we used to say, for, you know, Russian Jewry, that was at the time when they were behind the Iron Curtain, and also the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, we had a whole reading to commemorate the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, which began on Pesach, right, and we still do it. Then people had the Matzah of Hope. People had things. Rav Kasher had suggested we add the author of the Torah Shlema, that we add a fifth kos for the State of Israel. So there are, you know, Eliyahu. That's in a sense the redemption, the beginning of the process of redemption. So in many ways, the Haggadah, like the Siddur, is not a closed book. But one of the mistakes we make, that's what I was emphasizing earlier, you must, even more so than this, you must understand the Haggadah. It's the actual text you say is not that important in theory. The Rabban Gamliel, that's really the key text. Even the four questions, one does not really have to say the four. If you look in the Mishnah says if the child doesn't know how to ask any questions, the father teaches him the four questions. The implication is the four questions are sort of the lowest level, the kind of Haggadah. If you're having an in-depth discussion, you don't need this specific four questions. So the Haggadah is meant as a story between parents and children. It's an educational tool. Therefore, it cannot, by definition, in a sense, have a fixed text. The goal is not to read the Haggadah. So obviously, our sages have given us a text to use as a springboard. But as we say, Kol Amar Belisaper Hareza Meshubach, the more you expand and expound and talk, the more praiseworthy. And in a sense, the same thing as the Siddur. The Siddur is meant to be avodah shebelev, our heartfelt, our concerns, our petition to God. But it's very hard for people to do this on their own. It would be very hard for people to tell the story. So we do it, the anonymous authors gave us, you know, a text to work on. But most of the Haggadah dates to the Tannaitic period. Remember, like I said, it's going on in the temple in Beit HaMikdash. So that God is very, very ancient, much more ancient than the Seder. Okay, what's this here? Slake Rebek, slavery in Galut. Gershon, I'm not quite sure what you're referring to there. Maybe the eating of the matzah. If the cup represents redemption, Elios, the herald and the Mashiach, why is Mashiach not even mentioned? Two matters, the Mashiach, in a sense, is indirectly mentioned. We mention it, really, the whole second half of the Seder is about the future. If you look the way our Seder is structured, they have a very strange construction. Actually, that's the last, we're going to get to that, the order of the Seder in a few moments. But to answer the question, the way our Seder is structured nowadays, so we make Kiddush, Ikarpas, tell the story, do Magid, which is history, the covenants with God. God made a relationship. He took up his out of Egypt. We established the covenant. And then we break, and we eat matzah, and we eat maror, and we eat the korech, and we have a great meal. We say a little bit of challah before that, the debate how much. And then we eat a meal, and then we finish saying challah. We break halal up in the middle, which is very, very strange why we do that. Then we say halal hagadol, hodu l'Hashem, the whole halal. It's the only time of the year we're even allowed to say halal at night is on Pesach. So, why do we do that? And basically, what we have is the first half of the Haggadah is the Haggadah of the past. And the second half is the Haggadah of the future. Looking to the Nishmat Kochai, the Shofenat, if you hear the words, the Hodu Lashem, you know, Nikitov, even how we started, the Lashana Habab Yerushalayim, the whole Haggadah is looking forward to the future, to the future, the redemption of the Jewish people. I don't think we have to mention the Mashiach in a particular way. That is mentioning the Mashiach. The focus on the Seder is not the Mashiach. The focus on the Seder is Egypt, the Sipri Tzim Mitzrayim. We say at the beginning of that Gada, the debate, whether we will mention Pesach in Yemot HaMashiach. That's Kol Yemei Chayecha. That's the famous debate we have at the beginning of the Haggadah. But the Haggadah is really, the mitzvah of the Haggadah is to understand how we developed our relationship to God and why it was developed, and to understand the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, and that's the story of the Bikurim, even the farmer. We don't tell the story as a story, we tell the story as the point of the story. From the perspective of the farmer living in Israel, you know, thousands of years later, bringing the first fruit, seeing the result of the relationship we have with God. It's not to tell the story, it's to give meaning to the story. And that's why we don't pick the Shemot story, we pick the story, the shortened version in Dvarim, the essence, the lessons of the story. And then we lament, we're in exile, Halachmania and all the persecutions, and some people, unfortunately, they couldn't have red wine in the Middle Ages because of the fear of the blood libel, so people had white wine to show there wasn't any blood, all the terrible tragedies. Shpocha matcha, etc. So then we mention, then we look to the future. You know, it's not, the redemption is not over yet. So the second part is focusing on the future. But I don't think we have to mention Mashiach ben David. In general, Judaism does not make much mention of the Mashiach. It's a fundamental of our faith. But it's not, I don't mean it quite this way, but who really cares? Our job is to follow the Torah to make the world a better place, and the Mashiach will take care of himself. Don't worry about the Mashiach so much. Worry about why the Mashiach isn't here, what we've done. So we've always been very, we don't like the notion of the, you know, to speculate too much on the Mashiach, etc. Okay, I hope that answers the question. But one other point I'll say on the strange structure. I said the first half of the gut is the past, then we go to the future. The eating in the middle is really the notion that eating becomes part of halal. That's, of course, a very Jewish notion that our material and physical can be uplifted to a spiritual meaning and to a mitzvah. So we eat in the middle of Hallel. It's not, we don't eat in the middle of Hallel. Hallel consists of two parts. It consists of the praises of God and consists of us eating to express our, that combination and our love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are physical beings and we express our love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the spiritual world and in the physical world. So the eating of the meal is part of the halal. It's not a division. It's really part of the halal itself. Okay, so that's a little bit of the overall structure. Let's get to a couple other points, and then sort of we'll you know wrap up after that. Okay, mention the notion of the four questions or the five questions in the Rambam's Haggadah. Of course, the in the original like Seder, the third question was Shabbachol Olad Anu Achlim Basar Tzalish Aluku Mevushal. We can eat meat any way we want, roasted, fried, cooked. We can eat meat however we want. Alay Lezek Ulotzli. On Pesach night, the Korban Pesach has to be eaten only roasted. Of course, when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, so most people, I believe, I forgot to check it up now, right before the Shir, but I'm quite sure the Rambam actually has kept this question in his Haggadah, but most of our Haggadot have removed that question, because it's not such a relevant question anymore. So we've replaced that question. Clearly there was a notion to have four. Four was an important idea for the Seder. Four cups of wine, the four children, whatever. We have the notion of four. So we have to have the four questions. So they replaced the question with the one of leaning. Now, during the time of the Beit HaMikdash, that wouldn't have been a question because they always leaned. Everybody, that's how you had a fancy meal. That was a Roman custom. Everybody had their own table, their own place. They sat on the floor. They leaned back to relax, having a nice time. And but afterwards, that was the question we added. We do that only on Pesach. Of course, we don't do that today when we lean. That's the whole question, what if you don't lean? Today do you have to re-eat it? Whatever you want. That's a halakhic question. Since we don't lean anymore, how significant is it? But the custom is, for men and for women, that's an interesting, cool discussion about the role of women in leaning, that we lean at the Seder. So Rabbi Lam, the chancellor now of Yeshiva University, points out in the Yeshiva University Haggadah that it's very interesting. What we did is we picked, in a sense, this is a very, you know, look at us. We're here 2,000 years later. The Romans who tried to destroy us, who destroyed our temple, who tried to uproot like Judaism, Hadrianic, like persecutions, the five sages sitting in Bnei Brak, during the height of the Roman persecutions, the Bar Kokhba revolt, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, etc. So they tried to destroy Judaism, and they're not here, the ancient Rome, what happened to the Roman Empire? And the Jewish people can, in a sense, can laugh at the Romans, we can take their customs, and we can make them as part of our own. So in a sense, this is the joy of the Seder, that many nations, Vahish Amda, it's also, of course, part of the exile. Nations in every generation try to destroy us, but we're here. The bottom line is we're here, and they aren't. So that's, of course, an uplifting message of the Haggadah itself. But I want to now get, which perhaps, I don't know how many of you have heard this, what I thought was the first time I read this a number of years ago, quite a fascinating theory put forth by Mordechai Breuer, by Rabbi Mordechai Breuer, who passed away not too long ago. He was a couple years ago, I believe, maybe not even like that long. He was the great-grandson of Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, a great, Torah, thinker, in a way, on Parshanut HaMikra, very original, very creative, and in a certain sense controversial, some of his views. Get to your question in a moment. So he has a fascinating theory that the whole order of the Seder was totally transformed after the destruction of the temple. This is the book here, Perkei Moedot. It's a two-volume work on ideas of the holidays. Quite fascinating and very original. Anyway, so he says as follows. He says it's in approximately a 50-page article. I'll try to summarize it. He says as follows. The Talmud, we spoke earlier about karpas. Now, the Talmud says, why do we eat karpas? So, a lot of people know we eat karpas. There's no reason to eat karpas. Today, we want to encourage questions. the whole point of the Seder is the dialogue, as we mentioned, between parents and children, and therefore we want to engage the children. We hide the afikomen, etc. So we want to do strange things. So one of the strange things we do is we eat the karpas. We wash. We discuss why we wash now for the karpas. And I don't know, we eat. And the way our practice is, this was not the practice of the Rambam, but our practice is we eat less than a kazayit. You can't even eat much of karpas. You don't want to get into a question if you have to make a bracha achrona. So we just have a tad of the karpas, and then we tell a story for 2 hours, and then we eat. So the problem that that Rabbi Breuer raises, Professor Breuer raises, is that Talmud never gives a reason, an answer to that question. In other words, the Talmud says, why do we eat karpas? In order that the kid should ask questions. Okay, good. So now the kid asks the question. Okay, Dad, Mom, why do we eat karpas? So what do we tell him? The Talmud never gives us an answer why we eat karpas. So what Dr. Breuer says is as follows. He says, originally, the karpas was the introduction to the meal. The karpas was, you washed. The washing, I asked at the beginning of the shiur, why do we wash for karpas? And because the Nitziv says it's to recreate what happened at the Beit HaMikdash. And the time of the Beit HaMikdash, everybody washed when they dipped in food. He says, no, they were washing because they were about to eat the meal. They were going to eat karpas, matzah, a little matzah, mainly the Korban Pesach. That's what they were going to eat. And when you have a fancy meal, as Pesach is, you have hors d'oeuvres. So the karpas serves as hors d'oeuvres. Says, what happened? He says, and why did this go like this? In other words, they would not tell the Haggadah till after they ate. When they came up, maybe people would actually like this practice, especially now in daylight saving time, you know. I don't know where, depending where you live, but in Toronto, you know, the Shkia is after 8 o'clock already. So it'll be quite late by the time you start the Seder. But what Reb Breuer says, the people used to eat first and tell the story later. Why did they do that? He said, because there was the fear that get the two involved in the story and they would not eat the Korban Pesach at Chatzot, by the midpoint of the night. As we know, if the Korban Pesach or any sacrifice is left over, then that's a prohibition in the Torah and you have to burn it. So there was a fear that in order to go against that, the sages ordained that we had to eat the Korban Pesach by the midpoint of the night, let's say, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. You start the Seder at 9:30 at night, at 9 o'clock at night. It's not so hard to see how you haven't finished the Korban Pesach at 1 o'clock in the morning. If you're telling the whole story, you're doing it properly, and you're engaging the children, and there's lots of discussion. You have a big fancy meal, and the Korban Pesach said at 8 at the end, it can easily go past 1 o'clock. So the sages were afraid of that. So they said, of course, you come home, you make Kiddush, you wash, you eat karpas, you eat your matzah, you eat your Korban Pesach, you finish at 11 o'clock at night, whatever time, and then you tell the story all night. And he says, that's, of course, what the story, he says, the transition, that's the story of the five sages in Bnei Brak. They were sitting there all night. What's that story doing there in the Haggadah? It can tell you how easily you can get engaged in the Pesach story, and you forget it's the morning. Their students had to come and tell them it's the morning. So because of that fear, originally, during the time of the Mikdash, so he claims, I don't know if anybody else, I said it's quite original, but I think it's a very interesting idea, that they used to eat when they came home on Pesach night. They would eat the Seder, and of course that would answer a lot of other questions about the four questions themselves, which now make more sense. He's seen the leaning, he's seen the drinking of the four cups, etc. Well, that's not the question, but anyway, the structure of the Haggadah makes more sense, actually. And the Haggadah was said, you know, from 10 o'clock on till however late you could go. Because once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so the sages wanted to emphasize how different the Haggadah is. You didn't have to eat there was no Korban Pesach to eat. So it's true, we have a custom to eat the afikomen like the Korban Pesach, but it's not, this is not a biblical law. It's not as much, and many people are not so stringent about that. So, and that probably came a lot later anyway. So he said the sages during the generations after the temple was destroyed, they wanted to split the Seder to remind themselves. Whenever you have a mitzvah to do, you have to do the mitzvah before you eat. So you tell the mitzvah of the Agada before you eat. But they didn't just want to put the meal at the end. Then you wouldn't notice anything. What the sages wanted to do is for us to notice there's something very strange here. Why in the world do we eat an appetizer and wait for 2 hours till we eat the main course? So that would evoke the questions from the children. And the answer, according to Rabbi Royer, is supposed to tell them, you know what? You're right. This is not a normal Seder. This is not how the Seder is supposed to be. They're not supposed to be karpas as a question. Karpas is normal. It's the introduction. It's the appetizer to the meal. We're going to eat the meal, and then we'll tell them, unfortunately, we don't have the Beit HaMikdash anymore. We don't have the Korban Pesach, and you get into the negative, the downside. Most of the Seder focuses on upbeat, but we have to be cognizant that there are things missing, and then, is what I was alluding to before, you tell him why it's missing. Gatbash, you tell him Yitisha B'Av and Sinat Chinam, so we invite the Rosh, or we're going to invite your brother, who's not such a nice guy, to join us. And that's really, and the sensitivity, we care even about the Egyptians, we take off some of the wine, etc., etc. So that's how Rabbi Royer explained. I thought based on that, this already is my own idea, I don't mean it, I don't mean it, but when the first Mishnah in Pesachim says, or in Arvi Pesachim says that you're not allowed to eat Pesach in the afternoon, so you'll be hungry at the Seder, maybe that was set for a time when the people were eating right when they got home, you know, from the Korban Pesach. But now that we don't eat till 11 o'clock, so maybe that doesn't hold anymore. Maybe it's not so terribly at 4 o'clock. I don't, I'm not saying anybody to rely on that, but that's just an idea that came into my mind. Anyway, that's what Mordechai Breuer came up with, his idea. I'll just end with one more point, and then I'll give a quick summary, hopefully a 3-minute summary of the shiur, and then I'll take any questions. I just, to lean when you drink wine, suggest sipping. Okay, I'll take questions afterwards. Okay, you can type them in now if you'd like. Okay, the last thing I'll say is chametz and matzah we associate in general. Yes, you're a typical person, so chametz and matzah is one association. That's only on Pesach. That's it. Who cares about chametz and Pesach the rest of the year? It's irrelevant. I'm chametz and matzah. Who cares? However, we know that there is a halacha in the Torah that the korban mincha, which is the korban that was brought from flour, was not allowed to be made of chametz. The Torah says it, I think, at least twice. Lo tofa alav chametz. I believe both in Vayikra and in Sav, the Torah mentions the prohibition that the korban mincha cannot be brought with have any chametz. It's very strange. Why can't the korbanot all year? This is 365 days a year. Can't have any chametz in the korban mincha. Why? So the commentaries explain, I'm sure this already is a familiar idea, that the chametz represents arrogance and haughtiness, it rises, freedom, too much independence, you have all the time in the world. And matzah, the lowly, humble matzah, you have to work hard and you have to, you know, no arrogance. So when it comes to avodat Hashem, comes to coming closer to God, we can't have any chametz, we have to have the attitude of the matzah. Okay, very, very nice idea. There are two exceptions to the rule when the korban was allowed to have chametz. So one exception is really all year when you brought a korban toda, a Thanksgiving offering. That's the halacha states. That's basically the benching gomel of today may be a replacement of the korban toda. Somebody was sick and is recovered, went on a long trip, whatever, or he wants to offer thanks to God. So he would bring a korban toda. With the korban toda, you had 40 loaves of bread. So 30 of the loaves of bread were matzah, 10 of the loaves of bread were chametz. That was the one time 10 loaves of that bread, that particular korban, that element of the korban mincha, that exception, no part, could be chametz. And then you had on Shavuot, the shtei halechem. We bring the korban ha'omer on the second day of Pesach to commemorate the barley harvest. Beginning of the barley harvest in Israel is around the time of Pesach. And the wheat harvest begins on Shavuot. So we bring the korban shtei halechem, the two loaves of bread. And that was obligated to be of chametz. And the Torah makes a point. If you look in Parshat Emor, that it has to be chametz. It's not that it was chametz. There was a mitzvah we were insistent on it being Chametz. So here, Rav Shimshon from Father Hirsch explains that true freedom only comes through Kabbalah HaTorah. That's not Rav Shimshon from Father Hirsch. That's everybody. That's Ein Lecha Ben Chorin Ela Misho Seik B'Torah. That the true freedom in Judaism is to commit to following the ways of God. That's true freedom, not to have the anarchy, the freedom to do whatever you want, when you want, like our society sometimes advocates, but it's the freedom with the restriction that gives meaning to our freedoms. So because, as Rav Hirsch says, because on Shavuot is the time, at least according to our tradition, of Kabbalah HaTorah, so that's when we got our true freedom. So one time a year, we can eat chametz with the korban. That one day a year of Shavuot is when we gained our true independence, and therefore the Torah signifies that by letting the korban, by insisting the korban shtei lechem is made of chametz. But all year, we have to be very humble, work hard in our relationship to God. I thought the korban todah, because the korban todah represents the notion of thanksgiving, and that's the basic, principle of Judaism, beginning from Adam HaRishon. The Rashi points out he didn't have it towards, Chava. He blamed her for the tree. The Bikurim, the notion of the Bikurim, which forms the theme of our Haggadah, the central part of Magid, the Bikurim, that the recitation of the farmer, of course, is all based on gratitude. So when you have that, that's also an element of independence. When a person has gratitude, that's when shows gratitude. That's when you are truly free, and that idea, perhaps that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed part of the korban to be made of chametz. So I just mentioned that when we look forward to the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash and Lashana Haba Yerushalayim, to having the Seder as it was meant to be with the delicious lamb chops and the maror much in the background, only as a historical remnant of the Jewish people. And we look forward to the second half of Hallel, the Gula Shleiman, Eliyahu HaNavi coming, etc., etc. So we're also going to look forward to the Korbanot all year and the Korban Toda and all the Korbanos. That's something that we have to look forward to Jews, and to recognize that as wonderful a holiday and as great a holiday as Pesach is, and it has to be, there's something missing. And that missing is reflected in many aspects. And just to briefly review, we began by saying that Lashana Haba Yerushalayim is mentioned on Yom Kippur and Pesach because those are the two times a year we most feel the loss of the Beit HaMikdash. And that the goal of the Pesach Haggadah, the Netziv claims, is to recreate to the best of our ability to being in the Beit HaMikdash, so to speak. And that's why we wash for Karpas, because that was the custom in the temple. We wear a kittel, reminds us of the special clothing that the people would wear when they entered in the Beit HaMikdash. The Seder isn't what it's supposed to be. So we begin and end in Aramaic. The focus is Hebrew, the language of our redemption. But we begin and end. Halachmanya and Chagadja, everybody eats us up. This one beats up this one, beats up that one. To remind yourself that we're still in the Galut. And we can invite friends to our Seder, which you could not do if one had a Korban Pesach. So the Halachmanya itself is a lament that we're in the exile. The Magid itself changed. We do not say all six verses from the story of the Bikurim. We only say the four, because the verses of the farmer being in Israel were no longer applicable. The role of the Matzah has become more important than it once was, because it had to replace the loss of the Korban Pesach. Of course, the change in the four questions. And then we mentioned that perhaps, according to Reb Breuer, the whole notion of the change in the order of the Haggadah, that we now eat the meal later, whereas originally they ate the meal earlier to have the Korban Pesach. So let's hope that we should enjoy Pesach, and as we say, the Chatzal Seder Pesach Hilchata, we should merit to bring the Korban Pesach. I thinking this year, of course, Pesach's on Saturday night, so at Min Hazvachim, Min Hapsachim, there's a whole debate if you should switch the order, what we say at the Haggadah itself. And let's hope that one day we can bring the Pesachim and the Zachim and to remember, as our prophets have always said, and that the goal of the Seder, as I alluded to earlier, is develop our sensitivity towards others. That's why the connection at Bash, the first day of Pesach, God took us out of Egypt for one reason, to remember we were slaves, to remember what it's like not to mistreat others, to develop our sensitivity, to give our workers off a day on Shabbos, etc., etc. And the Korbanot reflect that that notion. And I want to wish everybody Chag Kasher v'Sameach. And I'll wrap up the shiur now. And if there are any like comments or questions, I'll be happy to take them either on the screen or by voice if anybody would like to speak.
I'm a puzzle A. This is great stuff.
Okay. I don't think anybody can hear you.
They can't hear me.
I don't know. I think so.
We're going to talk.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Okay. All right, were there any questions here that I didn't answer? To leave when you drink wine, they're sipping. Okay, I guess, okay, everybody can have a good night. All right, thank you. And the next year in this series is on Motzei Shabbos, when Rabbi Liebtag will be talking on Psukei Dezimra. Is that the first version of Magid? Okay, good night to all. Thank you. Good night.
Yes, you're close.